Zecher Rabbi Yisrael Neach ben Rabbi Yitzchak Matasyahu. We were holding, today's daf is daf Mem. Now, I want to just remind you, even though normally you would have been chazering the whole day, but because of the Levaya yesterday, I assume you were very busy, didn't have a chance to chazer. So, let us briefly review what it is that we were talking about. We had a machlok, or what appeared to be a machlok, between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda, in which Rabbi Yehuda says, you're mechuyev to pay. And Rabbi Yaakov says, well, you're mechuyev to pay, but only chatzi nezek. So Abaya ended up finding that this is a machloket, and there's no way to make Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda completely consistent. They must be arguing in something. Now, we don't know quite what they're arguing in. Now, let me remind you of what the factors are that we needed to take into consideration in this machloket. First of all, we need to take into consideration what level of shmira is required for a tam, and what level of shmira is required for a muad. Now, actually, this is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, as we're going to see. And there is a tzad to say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that a tam requires more shmira than a muad, and that the Torah only potters you for tam with a shmira me'ula. That's issue number one. Issue number two is when a tam becomes a muad. Is a muad a tam plus, or is a muad a new state? If it's a tam plus, then that means that all the dinim of collection on the tam remain on that portion, the chatzi nezek, of the shor hamuad is limited in the same way that collection is of a regular shor tam, even though now it's a muad. And the third issue that was important was in the event that you have a court-appointed guardian over yitomim, and the yitomim own a shor tam, does the guardian act as the owner only in terms of being the object of testimony that can turn that shor into a muad, which would now allow us to collect? Or does the guardian also serve as the owner in terms of being mechayev chatzi nezek from the tam itself? So that's the question of ma'amidin le'ma'apotropos for the tashlum of tam migufam. That was a machloka. Three separate machlokas in the way in which we understand the interrelationship between these two issues end up becoming a very, very beautiful source of alternative explanations of the interrelationship between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov in the explanation here of what the din is of Tashlumim. Now, it did not say here what the case was. It didn't say whether the shor was a tam, whether the shor was a muad. All we saw was a very strange machlokas in which it says, if you have a shor that belongs to a katan, that's no geah, so apparently there's a court-appointed guardian, it says Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayev, and Rabbi Yaakov says you're chayev chatzi nezek, which is anyway a very strange way of saying something. And we wanted to know what was the machlokas, because obviously he can't be talking about a tam. How could Rabbi Yehuda be saying nezek shalai if it's a tam? On the other hand, it can't be talking about a muad, because the problem is that if that would be the case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even a shor of a pikeach would only pay. If it's talking about a shmira pkuta, would only pay chatzi nezek. And if he didn't watch it at all, so then obviously Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't have pottered you. So I don't get what the case is. So therefore, the Gemara wanted to know, so what is the machlokas? According to Abaye, who claims it's a machlokas, what exactly is the machlokas? So Abaye had a brilliant shot. Brilliant. Abaye says, the issue between them is legabi the chiyav of chatzi nezek, whether you're going to be paying chatzi nezek on only the chelek of the muad and not the chelek of the tam. That's the brilliant idea. Because says Abaye, actually, Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda agree in all things except for one. How do you paskin in the issue of collecting from a guardian the chatzi nezek of tam? So all Rabbi Yaakov is saying is, look, Rabbi Yehuda, you can't collect the whole thing, because since tzad tam has been koma omedet, which we're both agreed on, and therefore, though we're talking about a case where you didn't watch it at all, you still can't collect it because it's not Thomas Bimakomo Menes. Because after all, do not the Rabbanan say that a guardian cannot be used by a court to collect off of Yitomim from the body of a Shor HaTam? Since even though this is a Shor HaMuad, half of it, like Abed Dinim of collection, is a Shor HaTam, that part you can't pay. Therefore, says Abai, here we have an incredible case where you're Chayev Chatzi Nezek because you're not paying for the Tam portion, you're only paying for the Muad portion. An amazingly creative explanation. So it turns out that according to Abaya, Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are agreed in all the things that are unique to Rabbi Yehuda, namely that he's sure that Tatamus has been Kema Omedes, and that Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that a Tam requires Shemir Ma'ula. That's all fine, except that we're not talking about a Tam, we're talking about a Muad. the Magabit at Sab Tammuz, over there we have the same dinner as the Tam, right? But here we're talking, here that's irrelevant. That's important to note that according to Ovaya, since we're talking about a Muad, that, maybe just put it down, just stick it on the Shender. Since we're talking about a Muad, Abaya ends up not addressing the question of Shmira Mu'ul and Shmira Chuta, because he's talking about a case where Lo Natri Klal. So in other words, the only, if you call it a weakness, the only weakness in Abaya's explanation of the Machlokas is that it is not as broad in terms of telling us what the Kedushim is, because once you're talking about a Muad without any Shmira, which is the case over here, you're basically ignoring the question of whether Shmira Mu'ul or Shmira Pechut is enough. Now, Rava, on the other hand, said, who said it's a Machlokas? It's not a Machlokas. When Rabbi Yaakov said, what do you pay? You pay Chatzi Nezek. He wasn't coming to say that I argue in Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda holds you pay Nezek Shalem. He was saying that you pay only Chatzi Nezek. That's the point. Because, after all, if we're talking about a case where you were Shemer, the Shmira Chusa, you'd be put on the Chatzi Nezek at the Muad part, but Chayev on the Chatzi Nezek at the Tam part, and if we hold that they both agree that you can collect from the Tzad HaTam, as an apotropos, so then they're all agreed. What's the problem? Now note that according to Rava, we are making use of all of the issues, all of them. Because according to Rava, we're talking about a Muad where you were Shemir at Shmira Pchusa, which addresses the question of whether Shmira Ma'ula or Shmira Pchusa is necessary for the Chelek HaTam or for the Chelek HaMuad. So that's issue number one. We're addressing the question of Tzat Tamud Bimkoma Omedet, because since this is a Shara Muad, it would be completely irrelevant any differences between one half of the Nezek and the other half, unless you hold Tzat Tamud Bimkoma Omedet. And we're furthermore addressing the issue of whether you can collect Chatzi Nezek from a Tam, which is all three issues. According to Bayer, we're only addressing two issues. Okay. With that in mind, we can understand today's Gemara, the continuation. And let us now continue from the third line up on Lamed Tet Amud Beit. Omar Le, Rav Acha bar Abaya l'Ravina. So Rav Acha bar Abaya says to Ravina, look, Bishleim al Abaya, according to the way Abaya is learning, by the way, some taina, this can't be Abaya's son Rav Acha, because I would have referred to his father by his first name, and they change it to Rav Acha bar Ovin to Ravina. However, there are cases in the Gemara where a child refers, or at least the Gemara refers to the reference of the child as Abaya, I mean as the father. Whether that means that in the context of the Machloket, you sort of objectify the Mandi Omrim, or whether the Gemara is just changing it to repeat the way an Amora repeats, right? The din is that the Amora who listens to the Tana, who says Avi Meiri, says the name to the audience. He doesn't say Avi Meiri. So that maybe this is what the Gemara is doing. Okay, but in any event, argues is Rabbi Chama Rabbi, says to Ravina like this, Vishleim ala Abaya the Amar Pligei chapter. Look, everything works out beautiful according to the way Abaya is learning it. And because he's saying, look, we can't be talking about a case of Tam over here to teach me that halacha. In other words, because after all, we already learned in the Mishnah that ain't my meaning, right? And that last verse. So therefore, okay, we're talking about the case of a Muad, a weird case, I agree, very creative, talking about a case of a Muad. Remember that none of the alternatives worked out. If you're learning it to Machlokas, no, there's no alternative. They can't be arguing about the issue of the whether your chayiv nezek shalom is a muad, whether your chayiv chatzin nezek is a tam. We saw that according to Rabbi Yehuda, even a shoshal pekeach would only pay chatzin nezek in a case where you're shem shmir mu. How could he say over here that your chayiv chatzin? Therefore, all that's left is the machlokas of whether you're geva from the apotropos. It works out beautifully. But according to Rava, who says that they're not arguing at all, what the heck forces Rava to say this complicated case where it's talking about a muad, and you were shemer shmir pchusim, and not shemer shmir meula, and they agree in all issues, and that all three things, therefore, they're in agreement with, right? I mean, why do you have to bring in a case that addresses all of that? You want to make it work out that Rav Yaakov and Rav Yehuda don't argue? Is that all that bothers you? So say a simple case. We're talking about a Tom. Hey, what level of Shmira? Whatever. If you hold like Rabbi Yudas, it's talking about Diyavad Le Shmira Pchuta, Velo Avad Le Shmira Ma'ula. That's Ishita. If you hold over here that Rabbi Yaakov holds Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that a Tom suffices Shmira Pchuta also, so then you could say Velo Avad Le Shmira Klal. I mean, I don't care why you're Chayav. What's the difference what level of Shmira you watch? You introduced an unnecessary complication by introducing the level of Shmira. What do I care? Just say it started the Tom and your Chayev, and then you're arguing. They're not arguing, and you're being masbir that you can collect the only the chatzi nesek. And to say, well, really, we're talking about a muad, but the tzatam has become a meda, so we treat it as a virtual tom, and then we have just the explanation. So, I mean, it's so complicated. You could say Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov over the Shmira Klal, and what am I referring to, by the way, in the Machlokes? Tanya Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov over Echad Tam Yachad Muad Sheshabram Shmira Pchuta Pturim comes along Rabbi Yaakov just to make it very clear. Listen, when Rabbi Yehuda said you're Chayev, obviously you're only Chayev Chatzin is going to short Tam, but I want you to recognize that that's the point. We're talking about a short Tam. Don't confuse yourselves. We're talking about a short Tam. And the point is, you're going to be paying chatzinesek from an apotropos? Absolutely. That's the point. Very good. So I want to make it clear that even though we're talking about chatzinesek, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda was saying, we will nonetheless collect from an apotropos, and that's good for the chiddush. That's what he was coming to tell me. But, I mean, I don't understand. What does Rava have to get into all of this complication? My God, to address all three levels and make it a case where it's a mu'ad, but half of a mu'ad is really a tam. Then we're going to have to say, what level of shmira? I mean, it's a little bit wild. Amalei Ravina, that's the whole point. Rava wasn't coming to explain how we can work it out that there's no machloket. That's not what Rava was coming to explain. Rava was saying that I know for a fact that this is the sheet of Rabbi Yaakov, in which case, the principle of density of information takes precedence, right? In other words, we always know that you have a chuyav to be malamid derech tzara, which means that you have to put in maximal information in the least amount of space. Therefore, I'm telling you, that's exactly what they were doing. Rabbi Yaakov was coming along to clarify that there is immense information density in Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Don't think that Rabbi Yehuda's talking about a simple case. He's talking about paying chatzinez. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it. So now you got to figure out, okay, what could that be talking about? Oh, aha, that's the pshat over here, chatzinesek. You're telling me it's a mu'ad. How could that be? Must be because, satam's been kind of it. It must be because there's a difference in the level of shmira, and you're only shmira this. And it must be because, furthermore, you can collect from an apotropos. There you go. All three issues are thereby addressed. So therefore, he comes along to teach me chodadi yitmei tartin. He wants to say one statement that includes now tarte taime, because he owns it. Lamaisa, they're not arguing anything. And therefore, I want you to know that they're not arguing anything. So I need you to know that they've agreed that the tzatams would become my menace, and that they're agreed that shmira pekuta is sufficient to part you from mu'ad, but not sufficient to part you from tamas. And now, okay, I mean, the other part, obviously, that's the Rabbanan and Somchas. Okay, I mean, that's not their personal kedushim. But this two kedushim is innate in the discussion of Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda. Ravina Amar, Ravina says, both of you don't know what you're talking about. That's not what we're talking about a year and old. Of course, they're arguing. We are all creating these crazy, complicated cases. It's a very simple case. What happened over here is that they're arguing about Rishut Mishaneh. That's the difference between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda. That's Ikabinayu. In other words, it's talking about that the shore was initially a muad. Comes along now the Cheresh, and he comes back home into his brains. Now we have a Baalin that's not the apotropos. The question over here is the Mu'ad still a Mu'ad, or did it go back to becoming a Tam? So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you're Chayim. Why? Because the Mu'ad before remains a Mu'ad. Comes along Rabbi Yaakov and says, no, Chatzinezek. Why only Chatzinezek? Because Rishut Mishana, just like we had in the Mishnah Machlokes. If you come back to an owner who is not different than the apotropos, so you now are owned by somebody new, if you're a shor. I mean, you don't know the details that this guy was, court-appointed guardian, aha, so therefore I should act in such and such a way. That's not the way you figure. But the question is, the direct relationship that you have to the owner, at least let us assume that that's what we're going to see today. We're going to get a little bit more sophisticated later about the machlokas of Rishut Mishana. But let's pretend at this moment that that's the question. Tana Rabbanan, apotropos. Apotropos in general are Mishal, Mimin Aliyah, despite the fact that they do pay Nezek, and of course we had a machlokas yesterday about whose Aliyah, whether it's their own Aliyah, that was the question of Yochanan and changing the gears and so on, but whatever it is, they do pay Nezek, but they do not pay Kofr. They Mishal Medita Kofr. So in other words, in a case where the Shor actually got out and murdered, as opposed to a Shor that damaged, there is no Chiyav. Mantana. I mean, obviously, what does this mean? I mean, if we can identify a Tana who holds that kufr is kapara, which means that when you're paying kofar, you're not paying for anything that relates to the damage. You are paying in order to avoid a chiyuv mita on the owner. So it says, v'gam ba'alav yumat, right? So, but, im kofar yushat alav. So that means that the Torah is discussing a virtual chiyuv misa, which needs to be averted by your paying kofar. Obviously, you would not say about a cheresh shayt v'katan gamba alav yumat because they're not legally responsible for their actions. If they're not legally responsible for the actions of the shor, in which case there's no payment of kofar here because there's no chiyuv misa saying gamba alav yumat in kofar yishat alav. If you can identify a tana that holds that, then we make perfectly good sense of this. Now, who is that tana that holds kofar is a kapora? And since yatbi lav v'nei kapora ninu, there's no point in the guardian paying. Because he's not the Baalim. The Gamba love you much. He's not the Baalim. And therefore, there's no payment to Kofar. Omer, Chista, well, I can identify him right off the bat. It's Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. How can I identify him? So simply the Tanya. We have a Machloket Tanayim that we've had many times before, Venatan Pidyon Nafsho. And the Torah says that in Kofar, Yushat Allah, Venatan Pidyon Nafsho. So who is the payment measured by when you pay Kofar? The main nizak, it's the value of the person who was killed. If he pays that value, that's the kofar. Bishwa Badosh Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says no. Pidyon nafsho means the main mazik. He pays his own value. So my law, Kamiflaket, is obviously now a machlokas about how to view the nature of kofar. Because if you're coming to redeem your soul, don't you have to pay the value of your soul? You have to pay somebody else's soul. You know, I mean, yeah, it's easy to say it. Tell somebody who isn't worth very much, I'll pay your soul. You think about, you have to pay your own soul. But so if you hold, therefore, that you pay the Demei HaMazik, so that means you hold Kufris Kapora. The Rabbanan who sold, you pay the Demei Nizik. Well, it's a form of monetary compensation. And that's the Kofar. So therefore, it must be that the Rabbanan Sabri Kufris Mamon, and Mishmo Benash Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Sabar Kufris Kapora, and there you go. We now know who the Mandiomer of Kufris Kapora is. Great. Rav Papa, no, not great. We don't know that from here. You can't conclude that from here. Maybe everybody owns kufr kapara. You're making a machloket with maybe no machloket. Because you use the word kapara. So kapara has to mean redeem your soul. You know, so you're thinking, how do you redeem a soul? You pay the monetary value. But there's such a monetary value of your nafsho. What it means is by taking responsibility for your actions, you redeem your soul. You take responsibility for actions by giving the value of the person who was murdered, and that is the redemption of your soul. You know, who said redemption of a soul means pay the monetary value of your soul, meaning your life, obviously, in this case, your prices in heaven. So everybody agrees that if you're looking at the idea, the Torah presents it as pidyon nafsho. So certainly, it's still true to say, yitomim, alav b'nei kapara, what do they need? But we have to tell me, in kofar yushat alav, because gam ba'alav yumat. They're not legally responsible. That's all. It's nothing to do with this machlokas at all. I mean, everybody else goes for kapar v'akabal kamiflagim. The Rabbanan say, okay, but what defines that kapar for God's sake? The nizik shaymina, we take the value of the nizik, and in doing that, you have now redeemed your soul. And Rabbi Shmuel is saying, Rabbi Shmuel should be open to Zohar, that it's been a mazik shaymina. I don't see why is this a problem. What's the machlokas about? My time in the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say, look, that word, you shat alav, appears two times in the issues of Mazikin. And there it says, Nemar Shita Lamata, Nemar Shita Lamala. The word Shita occurred before. And that is in a case where somebody accidentally smashed into a pregnant woman who's trying to punch her husband. And now he destroys the fetus with which she was pregnant. So over there, that's called the Mevelandot. So it says over there, Kasher Yashit Alam Ba'al Ha'isha. Which means in court. Over there, obviously, it's talking about the nizek, the value, the additional value that's given by the pregnancy, so that you can buy yourself a pregnant slave, which will give you additional slaves very rapidly. So you pay a little bit more for that. All of you have been in the slave market are well aware of that consideration. So, is that what we Jews do? You don't know that? Okay, so over there, clearly, it's a reference to the nizek. So when it says over here, in call for you shot, I love you, same thing. So Mala Halabin and Isaac, Afkan bin Isaac, Rabbi Shmuel ben Asher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, look, forget about all of these drushes on here. It's saying very clearly in the pasuk that that's not the intent. It says, Minatan pidyon nafsho. Okay, this pidyon nafsho, the only reference to the value of a life that is referred to over here is that it's the same pronoun. He shall give the value of his soul. Now, how did the pronoun his become two different people in the course of three words? Therefore, the pasuk is saying, I don't know what these drashas are. Whereas the rabbanan say, why does that have anything to do with it? Yes, it says, but you don't have show. What does that have to do with the yushat? It's just saying, and how do you give pidyon nafsho through yushat Allah? But that yushat means the levinizek. Why is that a contradiction at all? Miyuki shayminan, when we estimate the value of pidyon nafsho is benizek shayminan, that's all. So, mishabeach le ravel renakle revakle bar Yaakov. This is a classic kind of case, it's what it often does. Somebody makes the mistake of saying to a great rabbi or judge, oh, this man is brilliant. So, of course, the first reaction is he? Let's put him through his paces and see if he's really brilliant. So, Rabbi tells Rav Nachman, look, Rav Akiva bar Yaakov, he is an Adam Gadol. I'm telling you. Says Rav Nachman, okay, if you ever get hold of him, bring him in here. We'll put him through his paces and we'll see if he's an Adam Gadol. I love it the way every five-bit guy is an Adam Gadol, you know? Okay. So like a shavoliyat, when you get hold of him, aviyuliyat, he bring him into my hands. The spider waits. So okay, so he finally reaches Rav Nachman Kiyatul Gabay Omarlay. And of course, the way in which you really measure somebody is not by asking him questions. Everybody's got answers. It's by having him ask you questions. Now, by seeing what kind of questions he asks and where he hasn't worked things out, that's where you take the medal in that. So Kiyatul Gabay comes to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, "Okay, ask me something." Yeah. 29 milta, exactly. So he asked him like this, and here is why it's been brought in our sugya, because it's directly nogea the understanding of kofri. So he said to him like this. Suppose you have a shor that is owned by two people. So it's a shor 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 dafim, and there's partners in the shor. And what happens if that shor kills somebody? You're chayef kofri. How do you pay the kofri, okay? I mean, so Kate Mishalim and Kofer. Do we say, well, each one pays a Kofer? I mean, obviously you can't have a half of a Kofer. So Mishalim, I Kofer, I Kofer. I mean, the Torah just said, in Kofer, Yushatalav, not two Koferim. So Kofer, Acharam, Rachman, Vloshne, Koferim. How does this guy end up now receiving two Kofers? So if you're going to tell me, well, maybe each one pays half. I Chatzi Kofer, I Chatzi Kofer. So then nobody paid a Kofer. The Torah says a kofra. I mean, is there such a thing as a kofra of a joint nefesh of a partnership? I mean, that's pretty weird. That's like a whole new idea of corporate identity. I mean, we're talking about partners, not corporations. So kofra shalem or marachman, a lochatzi kofra. Then neither of you paid a kofra. Anyways, Rav Nachman, that's a pretty darn good question. So, the yativ, if it come high, and while Rav Nachman is they're starting to count on the backman. Okay, he's down. One, two, three. He comes at him with another punch. So he says, I got another one for you. Omarle says, here's the other one. Tanan, by me, arachinu mashkinim otan. The din is, if somebody said, erchi alai, or erch ploni alai, so if he doesn't pay right up, we send hotza'a lepol to his house, and they take away his TV set. Those will be mashkinim until he pays. But if he is chayav a korban chatas or a korban asham, we do not take away his TV set. And the reason for that is, we're going to point out, is that people take very seriously the need for their own kapara. So if they're bringing a korban, there's no need to take away his TV set. I mean, the only way you can watch TV and not feel guilty is if he pays his, brings his korban chatas, brings his korban asham. So he's going to do that anyway. So you really don't have to worry about it. Now, what I want to know is, what was it then about the chiyuv of kofar? He asks Rav Nachman. Okay? Do we say, well, kofar is a kapara, so therefore it's like a chatat v'asham dami, and makamer chomer iluyeh, the man takes this very seriously, and he's going to pay it without your coming along, v'lo boy mashkuna, you don't have to take a mashka. Or do we say, now look, there's a big difference between a korban that comes to the Beit HaMikdash, and that seems very holy and very, very valuable as a kapara, as opposed to taking money out of your wallet and giving it to another guy, I mean, which is what you'd have to do over here, that you don't really take all that seriously, you know? So do we say, kiva de la chavre, the boy miyatva, he has to give the money to his friend. So then he looks at his momono, velola gavoa, velola chomrali, that's just a monetary issue, and it's a formality, and we'll put it off, we'll do that next year, one of these days. So therefore, therefore, you're going to have to take a mashkin. Or there's another tzad also. We could say that in the case where he's bringing a korban chatas, a korban asham, he views himself and his soul as being in bad shape. And hellfire awaits it because of his sin. So even nu chatai, I understand, but over here he wasn't chotef. My shor, I mean, come on, it's just my shor, it's not me. How seriously could God take that, you know? So it's mamoni udasik. So again, maybe because of that, lo chamon yote luye uboy mashkenei. So you'd have to take a mashken. Rabbi just feels, let me go. You kill me with the first one already. You stop touching me when I'm down. Shafkan, you start to become aite. All right, you close the issue with the first question. Turn it up. I don't know the answer to the first one. You hit me with the second one. It's fine. You're not going to go. Goodbye. Turn it up. Sha'alo b'cheskat tam. Benim tamuad. How about a guy borrows a shor, thinking it's a tam? But it really turns out that it was a muad all along. And it goes on and it damages. So the din is over there. Look, I mean, the poor shor was ever b'kabal, the dinim of tashuli nezik shalom. And he figured the worst that could happen is a b'chatzi nezik. So the bialim has to, because he fooled him, he has to pay chatzi nezek, and the shomer takes responsibility for the other chatzi nezek. Furthermore, continues the brisa, who ad bebeit ha-sho'er, if the shor became a muad while it was in the reshus of the borrower, and now he returns the shor to the house of the baalim, then the baalim only pay chatzi nezek, and the shor is potter completely on any further damages. Now we're going to analyze this. Let's start at the beginning. You borrow a shor b'cheskas tam. It turns out to be a muad. The baalim pay half and the shor pays half. Why did the shor pay anything? Am I? Leimalei tura she'ili. Ayeno she'ili. I borrowed a shor, not a lion. Now you give me a lion in a shor's clothing. I never would have borrowed a thing like this. It's dangerous. What are you, crazy? Some kind of mutant lion that looks like a shor? I never would have brought it into the Marishas. Therefore, I'm not responsible at all because it's a mekaf toros and I was fooled. No, Amarav, you're right. He could say that. It's talking about over here that basically we take a DNA test and we prove that it's a shor, not a lion. So what happened is he actually knew all along that this was a vicious shor, but it wasn't made a muad in court, right? Okay, so you can't say I didn't know I was taking something vicious because you know it was something vicious. Like, I didn't know I would be chayv nezik shalom. Fine, okay, so only pay chatzin nezik, I'll pay the other chatzin nezik. But don't tell me you never would have borrowed it. Of course you would have borrowed it. So why can't he say v'neima lei tam she'ile muad lo she'ile? Why can't he say to him, but I mean, I never would have taken a muad, because the owner says to him, what difference to you is what the technicalities are, okay? Sof, Yishabamalei, the owner says to him, what difference does it make to you? What's the bottom line? The bottom line is if it was a tam and this would have happened, you would have paid palganiska bar shulbe. Okay, so ashtanami, go pay your katsinezik, I'm making up the rest. V'neima lei, why can't he say to the owner, no, because I thought it was a tam, and if it's a tam, then it would only have been mishtalei migufo, not from my own bank account, and now it's being paid from my bank account. Because the owner says, what's the difference? It's from your bank account or from the shor, even if you're the limiter of the akiva, that you actually own the actual shor. You would have had to return the shor to me, and then I would have taken it out of your bank account. What's the difference when it pays directly from your bank account or not? I mean, bottom line is you don't lose anything else. Don't you have to pay me back my shor anyway? So if that's the case, then it boils down to the same thing, because you'll have to pay me out of pocket if you're not going to be able to give me back the shor. So, Neimalei, nonetheless, why can't he say, you know what, if it was a tam, I would have run into court and I would have been murdered. Because chatzi nezek is a knas, and then I would have been potter. And even if you hold chatzi nezek as mama, I still would have gotten out of it. Because if you were not the owner of Arganiski Mamona, namely, he could still say to the owner, well, if it was a time like I fought, the din is that you have to put the shor into the defendant box in the court. Well, I would have moved that shor into a place where they never would have found it. Ave marikna lele agma, I would have put it out the pasture. They never would have found it, and therefore I wouldn't have had to pay. But now that it's a muad, we don't need the presence of the shor, and because of that I need to pay, and therefore you fooled me, and I don't want to pay the customers. Must be talking about Achmar's skin could go in the act and begin of a tafsi. The cops were right on top of the issue. They already grabbed it, you see. So now you can't make any of these titles. Wait a minute. If the cops grabbed it, then the owner shouldn't have to pay anything. Because the owner should say, you idiot, you let the cops find out about this and grab the shor, you're fully responsible. If I would have been there, I would have made sure that nobody would have ever gotten hold of that shor. Yeah, so why should the Baalim be Mishalim Chatzin Nezek? They can say, you who let my shor be caught by the cops, You put my shor into the hands of people who are above the law. I can't do anything about these guys. They are the law. The old sheriff, I am the law. Right? So what am I supposed to do? Mishum the Amarle. Because he can respond to that, the shor, he would have said, look, you want your shor back or you don't want your shor back. I mean, let's say I would have been a good guy. I would have made sure that the shor was hidden out in the pasture, right? So you would have come to me and you would have said, where's my shor? So I would have said, well, if you want your shor, the cops are going to find it because they're going to give it back to you. They're waiting. So in the end, they would have come to you. So therefore, he says back to him, I would have given it back to you. They would have taken it from you. So what's the difference? We're arguing about something irrelevant. Why? Let him say, are you kidding? If you give it back to me, I would have transferred it out to a place where nobody would ever have found it. That's because he could say back to him, look, wouldn't they anyway have come? It's a mu'at. It would have been mishtalim and aliyah. So the shor doesn't have to be in the witness, in the defendant box. So, well, what's the problem? So the bottom line is, as far as you're concerned, I mean, all my tainas are that I thought it was a shor and that, and you're telling me why you can't say that. But you can't come back to me and say it was a tam, it was a mu'at. So it was a mu'at, all of this is irrelevant. Wait a minute, but that's only if this guy owns something other than the shor. I mean, the shor is the only thing that he owns. So then he can say, well, now you've taken away the only thing that I own by letting the cops get it. So Hechad let Leinich say, my ikala meimar. There the Shoel can say, look, because of the din of Rabbi Natan, remember the din of Rabbi Natan is that if A owes B and B owes C, then A owes C? So what are you tying it to me? There's nothing you can tie it to me, because I do no longer have to deal with you. Basically, this is your shor, I owe you the shor. But you owe the Nizik the shor. And therefore, all that's happened is that I paid back the loan that I was supposed to pay back, like it says, v'natam l'asher kamlo, which is what I did. So, ki hechad mishta abadna l'didachat, inam mishta abadna l'ayin. In the same way I owed you a shor, I owe the Nizik a shor, from Rabbi Nelson's principle. T'tanya Rabbi Natan omer minayin l'noshe b'chaviromon, v'chaviro b'chaviro minayin sh'motziin mizeh v'notin l'zeh, talmud l'mar v'natam l'asher, asham lo. So therefore, the one that's ultimately owed the money is the Nizik, and he got the shor, and leave me alone. Now, you then say that if the shor became a mu'ad in the Beit HaShoel, and he gives it back to the Baalim only pay chatzi Nizik, and the shor is potter miklum. Do you understand the impossible nature of this braita? Because there's only one explanation for why the mash'il should only pay chatzi Nizik. That is that the return is a reshut mishana. It used to be in the hands of the shoel. Now it's in the hands of the owner. So therefore, we say, okay, if you switch owners, which essentially vis-a-vis the shor is what happened, you switched owners. So now it goes back to being a tam. That's what you're saying. But if that's the case, if a mash'il gives a shoel a shor, you've switched owners. But you said that if the shor was a mu'ad and the shoel thought it was a tam, well, it is a tam. Because even if it was a mu'ad, it would have become a tam when he gave it to the shoel. So there's a built-in contradiction to this bride. How can you have it both ways? I don't understand. So this braita is a stira min eil bay. The first part of the braita says that sefer reshut mishana. But the last part of the braita says that giving it back to somebody else, in this case the original owner, changes the status of the shor back to tam. So it resets the shor. And the reisha clearly took for granted that in lending to someone a shor mu'ad, it does not turn back into a shor tam. How do you explain that? Reshut eina mishana. Says Rabbi Yochanan, it is beyond the level of a human to explain. It's definitely not explainable. And therefore, the only thing we can say is that the Braita makes a very clear contradiction so that we should understand that there's a machloket about this issue. One part is going according to the Mandi Omer who holds that Rishut is Mishana, and one part is going according to the Mandi Omer who holds that Rishut is not Mishana. There's no other way of learning it. So Tavra, this Braita must be broken into two, and it was made in such a way that any fool can see that it's done by two different people. Misha Shanazo, Lo Shanazo, the author of one half is not the author of the other half. We put it together in such a way to ensure that an intelligent human being can figure that out for himself. And meanwhile, we find out the dinim according to Bar Shittot. What will the halacha be? Rabbah says, no, I don't believe that. I believe that we should start at the beginning, okay? The Reisha assumes that Rishut Eina Mishana, because it says that the Muat Shor remains a Muat Shor in the hands of a borrower. If that's the case, then that's the given. Now let's put on our thinking caps and figure out how we can work out the Sefer to also hold that Rishut Eina Mishana. So what is the reason that in the Sefer, the owner does not have to pay Nezek Sholim? Hainu Taima. It is beyond your power to make my shor a mu'ad. I did not lend my shor to you that it should become a mu'ad. Now, there's two ways of understanding this. And the Rishonim discuss both ways. One is that the din of the hu'ad b'alav is, in fact, a halacha that has nothing to do with the shor, per se. We've already seen that. That's with the Baalim, the technical Baalim. We can know, for instance, that the Shor is a Mu'ad, but that won't change anything if we can't be Me'id to the Baalim. So therefore, what the owner is saying to the Shor is, look, I may have lent him to you so that you stand in the shoes of the Baalim in terms of responsibility. I never meant to make you the Baalim to be able to be the one that they could be Me'ayah the Shor. Therefore, it's not a Shor Mu'ad. Aye, so then the taina is, if that's the case, why would the Shoel be responsible for Nezek Shalem? And in that case, there would. That, we'll have to say, is not a stira. So in other words, there's such a thing as a ha'adah that will affect any and all Baalim, and there's such a thing as a ha'adah that is a din in the current situation, but not because the Baalut is mishaneh, but because a different level of Baalut is mishaneh. That's what we'll have to say. That's one approach. The other approach is, which the Rashba in his second shot, and Rashi seems to mean here, is that what he's saying is, since Ha'adah is always an interrelationship between the Shor's behavior and the level of Shmirah that the Baalim gave it, because after all, if the Baalim would have been extra special careful, this would never have happened. So there's always something in which you are responsible for that situation. And I say, since this was not the normal situation, I'm the normal Baalim. Now over here, do you really think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden it becomes a mu'ad because I gave it to a shmo like you? No, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's because you're a shmo. So therefore, let the shmo be responsible. But don't say you turned it into a mu'ad when it gets back into my rishus, because I'm not a shmo. And my level of shmira will be better than your level of shmira, and we never made it a mu'ad for that level of shmira. That's what I say. Okay. Again, this tremendous tradition in terms of the din of mu'ad. We now see very clearly that the level of the interrelationship of Shmira, Baalim, and Shor is much more complex than we thought. We thought it was only a matter, but that's because we weren't thinking very well, that it was only a matter of defining how the Shor behaves. Clearly, there's more to it than that, even though it has to have something to do with the Shor's behavior, because otherwise we couldn't learn out the various modes of Mu'ad, that it depends on the day of the week, and it depends what color clothes, and it depends. And obviously, that has something to do with the Shor's psychology. But it's the interrelationship of that psychology with the owner and with the way that the owner is shown her. So therefore, actually, mood is a heck of a lot more complex than it appeared. So that therefore, once you take into consideration all three factors, then you can understand that it works in this direction, that the real owner can tell the show, look, this is not the norm, and therefore wasn't a mood for me. Masha Enke, to transfer one owner to another, then we would say, no, we wouldn't say, Rishut Mishan. That is Rabba's approach. Rav Papa says, I say the other way around. I agree that we should not have this brayta be a brayta set by two different shittot. Yes, but I say the case that's clearly given is that Rishut is Mishana. I mean, that's the most dramatic part, is that when it goes back into Rishut of the Baalim, so then Rishut is Mishana. And if that's the case, but it's safe Rishut Mishana, we have no choice but to say that the Reisha is Rishut Mishana. And what I say is that the Reisha is not a problem. Because when you lend something to someone, it's all very nice to talk about the nature of the Shoel becoming, so to speak, the Baalim legally. But he's not the Baalim in terms of pure ownership. He's only the Baalim in terms of responsibility. And therefore, wherever the Shor is, it's owned by the same person. If you're telling me... Forget about the interrelationship, the psychological interrelationship of the Baalim. There's no legal relationship to the Baalim. Who is the Baalim? So the Baalim, in terms of the permanent definition of this shore, is the owner. So then it was always the owners. That's all I'm saying. So Hayna Taim is the Kol Makom Sheholeik Shein Ba'alav Alav. It doesn't matter if somebody borrowed it. Somebody borrows it, and you see that somebody using this shore. You walk by and say, oh, wow, how nice. You borrowed George Shore. You don't say, ah, so today it's George's shore. Obviously. Therefore, in this case, there is no Rishos Mishana, because it's the same Rishos. Next case we have was Shore Ha'itzadin. So if you have a shore that has been trained to go out and to kill or to do damage, Eino Chayav Mita, he boiled. Our question is, how about this shore being brought on the Mizbeah? Now, it's a murderer, but it's a murderer only because it's been in the bullfights. It didn't have much of a choice. It was either me or him, according to Tosafot. Or, according to the other Rishonim, it is basically acting as a skinner bull, not as a skinned bull. And therefore, it should be Potter, because this is not its own mind. It's been trained here in such a way that it's, you know, it's an onus, so to speak. So what would be the din legabe mizbeach, where the Torah says it's dafka, as we'll see, we dash from the pasuk, that you can't bring a shor that is a rotzeach on the mizbeach. It's a shor anisko. So Rav says this is not a normal shor anisko because it's pater. So Rav amar kasher, v'shmul amar pasul. Rav amar, that's something else. So I won't own it. We'll shechter, I'll give it to the mizbeach. Rav amar kasher, because it's an onus. V'shmul amar pasul. What's the difference? The bottom line is that on some level, a shor, I mean, you know, a shor is an object. So it may be true that on some level it has volition. It doesn't make choices. And therefore, what we say over here is that the way we look at a shor is that it's more of a passive issue. So even though it's passive in terms of being a Skinnerian bull, nonetheless, it was never bo'avera. I mean, it was used for murder. Even though it was in the stadium, it was used for murder. So that's enough to pass it for the Mizbeach. Mizbeach doesn't want things that are murderous. Okay, so this is the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Nice. Mira Beima, here's the drush. We darshan the posik of the Berel Bnei Yisrael, the Amar Tala Yam Adam Ki Akrif Mikem Korban Hashem, Min HaBeima, Min HaBakar, Min HaTzon. Okay, so then we have Min, means out of, the specific type of bakar, the specific type of bema, the specific type of tzom. We got a lot of miyutim over here, so we darshan it. Mina bema lo tziat harovea ve'et anirva. So now, a shor that was used for sexual purposes is pasul. Mina bakar is lo tziat anevad. A shor that was used for idolatrous purposes is pasul. Mina tzon is lo tzi even a mukta, where it was set aside for use by Avodah Zarah. Also possible. Then we have umin hatzon. Umin hatzon adds that a shor that was used for negicha, it's possible. Now, says Rabbi Shimon, in ne'amar roveah, lama ne'amar nogeach, in ne'amar nogeach, lama ne'amar roveah. Why does the Torah have to tell me both a nogeach and a roveah? Why would we not be able to learn one from the other? Mipnei sheyesh b'roveah shem b'nogeach, v'yesh b'nogeach shem roveah. The truth is they're different. Because roveah asaba onis kiratzon. By definition, a roveah, we know, is chayev, even though it was only an object. So, in other words, somebody took a shor, used the shor for sexual purposes. It's not that the shor was responsible over here. Certainly in the case of a nirva, it's not that the shor was responsible. Tosfos says he doesn't understand why Rashi is saying in the case of a nirva. Apparently, Rashi is saying, says Tosfos, because of the fact that even with a shor, we would say if he has an erection, then he has to be involved. So it's got to be the shor's fault. But that's not true, because it might be talking about a case where the shor was planning on mating with a nice other shor, and some crazy human took it and used its erection for his own purposes, or her own purposes, right? But I would suggest that the point over here is we're actually saying it's innate in the question of a nirva, that it is an ones, because it's passive, completely. So if that's the case, it's a given that the Torah is ossering in a rove and a nirva that the shor could be an ones. That's an osaba ones karatzon. Whereas when it comes to nogeach, it's not osaba ones karatzon. By nogeach, we don't say that, because it says, as we said in the pasuk, ki yigach, and not that other people should make it an akatzon. So it's not the same. And we're going to see in a moment, legabe what? Nogeach will be Mishalim Kofer. A Roveah is not Mishalim Kofer. That's why I say Roveah, and that's why I say Nogeach separately. Now, let's analyze that Braita in light of the question that we just raised. Katani Miad, it says over here is a given in this Braita, that a roveya is considered to be honest karatzon, and a nogea is not considered to be honest karatzon. So, now, legabe what is it not honest karatzon? So, lamai yochata, lav le korban. I mean, we're talking about the case that we're darshening over here. Mina beima, mina bakar, mina tzon, is legabe dinim of korbanos, right? And now comes along Rabbi Shimon to explain why we needed to say both. And in the context of his explanation says that the Torah does not view the Nogeach as, that does it, Ba'ones, as being possible the way Baratzon. Ah! So that is saying that Lagabe, the dinner of the carbon, would be kosher, which is what Rav is saying. He says, well, no, who says it means that? Maybe it means Lagabe Ktola, the Chi of Misa. He's not saying in this case. He's just saying if we hadn't been told that a shor nakhan is possible for the mizbeach, I wouldn't have been able to derive it from the roveah, because I would have said, when it comes to the chiyav of misa, that there is mechalek between aines and rotzen. Masha'inkein, when it comes to the sexual shor, that there is not mechalek between aines and rotzen. That's all. Who's talking about in context of karma? By the way, I'm not telling you stam. It's very reasonable, that's what we're talking about, because if you're going to tell me that we're talking about the case of karma, nogeach lo asabo aines karatzon, what is that supposed to mean? The Torah didn't talk about an onus. The Torah doesn't talk about anything. The Torah doesn't talk about onus. The Torah doesn't talk about rots, and it's irrelevant. You're introducing a new issue. You can't introduce a new issue. The Torah hasn't discussed this issue, so now figure out the issue. The only place where the Torah addressed the issue was by Sharit Stadin. So that if you're going to look anywhere, you're going to have to look anyway to Ketola, because that's the only place where the Torah introduces the difference between the Skinner Shar and the regular Shar, right? Okay, so then we're not talking about Karbanis. Because lo onus didei k'tivi and lo ratzon didei k'tivi. We didn't discuss onus for ratzon in the pasuk. So how does Rabbi Shimon come off talking about onus for ratzon? Lo lav l'ktala. So therefore, clearly, what we're talking about is l'ktala. Nogeach m'shalem. I just want to understand what you're saying. You're saying a nogeach is m'shalem kofer. The rovei is not m'shalem as a kofer. What do you mean the rovei is not m'shalem kofer? What kofer? Where is there a kofer for a rovei? I don't understand what we're talking about over here. It's not m'shalem as a kofer because kofer is for murder. You know, so what does one have to do with the other? That's like saying, well, the Shor HaNiskal spilled blood, but the Shor HaRoveh didn't spill blood. I mean, so, but then we're talking about something else here. So what's the case? I don't get it. Echidami. I mean, is it talking about that he actually murdered this woman by raping her? So Ilei Medarav Avekatla. So Malikatla Vekarna, Malikatla Revi. Who cares what weapon he uses to kill this woman, you know? So if he would have raped her with a horn, and he would have killed her. So he raped her the regular way, so he killed her. But it's the same idea that would be Karen. I mean, what's the idea anyway? So why wouldn't he pay the kofer? Elad's talking about that he rapes a woman, let's say, and he did not kill this woman. So obviously he doesn't pay kofer. He doesn't pay kofer because nobody died. Why would he pay kofer? So Adel Mishan Kofer should go Katlo. Says Abai, I'll tell you what it's talking about over here. It's talking about Olam de Rabba Lo Katla. He didn't kill the woman, but... See, this woman was very into what was going on. It's not as if she was raped. So who said she was raped? The woman actually turned the shor on. Now, the bit over there is that she is Chayav Misa. And then that means it's all the shor's fault for being such a beautiful shor that he turns on this woman and now gets her killed. So therefore, what happened over there, that Yulav, they didn't have a katua, now they kill her. So now you come to the owner and you say, it's all your fault for having such a beautiful looking shor, right? Because now it's as if your shor killed this woman, because since he now sleeps with this woman, now she gets killed. So now the tamer commanded katla. That means as if he's responsible for the katla. Therefore, it's telling us, no, the Torah was not a chayav kofer in that fashion. But obviously, he's got to be talking about a case where somebody was killed. Rava says, okay, that's ridiculous. The case is that, yes, he raped the woman and killed this woman, okay? Your question, your initial question was no question. You're saying, what's the difference if he uses his horn or if he's horny? It's all the same thing. Not true, says the Gemara, not the same thing. Because maybe the Torah was only mechayev, the din of kofer, if he kills rekavanat al-hazik. Over here, certainly, his kavanah is not al-hazik. So therefore, you could easily say keren, which is chayev kofer, is daf, gets kavanat al-hazik. Masha'inkin, in this case, obviously here he's not interested in hurting anybody, so he's a little bit too big for her. But by Kligen, and what is the practical impact of this machlokas? Fantastic impact, because Abai is taking for granted that you would be chayef kofer, whether we could technically define that as Karen or not, because obviously Abai does not think that intercourse is Karen, right? Okay, so that means that Abai says that other mazikim, if they kill, let's say a regal, Rego walks into somebody's courtyard where a baby happens to have been put on the ground and walks on the baby without even noticing the baby, kills the baby. I mean, is the owner kind of kosher or not? That's the question. So if a buyer says, well, look, it doesn't make any difference. He says, Mali Kata Bakarna, Mali Kata Baravia. You say the same thing. Mali Kata Bakarna, Mali Kata Barega. So according to a buyer, in a Rego Shudar Saga, Beitinok Bechatsar Nisak, according to Baya Mishal and Kofer. Whereas according to Rava, who says, only when it's Kabbalatana Azikim, pay Kofer. So in that case, Lo Mishal and Kofer. In fact, Tanya Kavosi to Rav, in the original din of Rav, where Rav says that he's kosher and he's Beah, there's a bride that seems to say that clearly. Shora it's the din, eino chayav mita, as we said, ki yigach v'lo shidichu acherim. Furthermore, it's even kosher lagavim mizbeah. Why? Mipnei shehu kemi'usep, because it is as if, in having developed now, either, again, either the Skinner response, or the fact that it's being threatened with murder, I'll leave it to Tosfos, it's as if it was forced to do what it's doing, and forced, that is to say, as if somebody else moved it. Somebody else moves it, it's been used as a weapon. Obviously, we're not going to see that as something that has anything to do with the animal per se, if we're special about the Mizbeah, and that's exactly what Rav was saying. There's a very interesting thesis, by the way, that explains what could possibly be the Hava Mina, that just because he's got a nice looking shirt, that therefore he should be responsible for getting a woman killed. I mean, isn't that a little bit ridiculous? Yeah. So Tosis explains, talking about over here, that the Shar actually did intend to rape her. But he turned her on. So over there, the halacha is that if a woman tells the police, you know, I'm having such a good time, do not stop this rape. So the din is that anyway, the rapist is chayav. She's potter. Why? Because, you know, once she's already turned on, she can't stop herself. It's considered to be an onus, even though she's into it, which is amazing. The opposite of blaming the victim, right? You even blame the... Amazing. It's famish. I'm telling you, centuries ahead, even this vanasa. It's like unbelievable. So you might think that it was his original intent to rape that we should be mechayev the owner for.
She's still in the case
of
someone was married
and had... Yeah, yeah, it's onus. Yes, yes, yes. You got it.
Amazing.